Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, I'm Doug McBurney. This is the Weekly Worldview, the heartbeat of conservative talk on the internet. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. And I must confess that my pipes are a little scratchy today. I spent yesterday out witnessing on the streets, both to and against people. And I tend to get a little overzealous sometimes, and so my throat, well, you'll just have to bear with me, okay? It'll be a lower-key show this week because I can't yell because I did all my yelling yesterday. But let's jump right into it because I've got so much news. I don't think there's any way I can get through it all in the hour that is allotted for the Weekly Worldview here on the World Wide Web. I want to start in Stockholm. That's in Sweden for all you public educators. This is from the local Swedish news in English there in Stockholm. The bodies of thousands of rabbits culled every year from the parks in Stockholm neighborhoods are being used to fuel a heating plant in central Sweden. Animal control authorities employ... they're using the bunnies, well, the dead bodies of the bunnies, after they're shot and killed at a heating plant. The animal control authorities employ a special rifle to shoot the excess rabbits in the parks and the neighborhoods, with most of the rabbit culling taking place at dawn when the animals peek out of their holes. How cute is that? You know, the thought of culling rabbits first thing in the morning is really a beautiful thing for me. Now, I have a problem in my neighborhood. The rabbits are destroying my yard. And if I could cull them, I would do so. But I don't have a special rifle. I need one of these special rifles. I'm going to have to look into that and see if I can get those. Last year, according to the local Swedish news in English there in Stockholm, last year marked a new record for Stockholm's rabbit cull at nearly 6,000 rabbits. But rather than simply disposing of the dead rabbits, the city instead froze them for eventual transport to a special heating plant in central Sweden, where the bunny bodies are then burned as a form of bioenergy. And so the green movement must be extremely happy, but the animal rights movement, well, you know, there's going to be some tension there. Guess we'll have to iron that out between the greens, the tree huggers, and the rabbit huggers. Two different classes of dirt worshiper are going to have problems with this story. All right, now that's not a very serious story, I admit, and I always try to start on a lighthearted note because the news can be depressing. And speaking of that, let's move to the Bloomberg Wire. Homeland Security Secretary Big Jack Napolitano said law enforcement authorities are tracking terrorists with Al-Qaeda leanings in the United States. Okay, and so having, you know, Big Jack Napolitano in charge doesn't really make me feel very safe. Her character doesn't strike me of that as a great world leader capable of preserving the peace and the safety of her people. She doesn't strike me as, let's say, Winston Churchill or, you know, somebody like that. Let's see, what else does the story tell us? The secretary, Jack Napolitano, met with financial institutions on threats to computer systems last week, and she was in New York also to appear on ABC's The View and The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. So they're not exactly Winston Churchill-esque. Churchillian? How would that go? Anyway, Big Jack does not help me sleep good at night. But I do have some good news from the justice file. Director Roman Polanski, according to his lawyer and the Reuters wire, Roman Polanski is feeling tired and depressed in jail over there in Sweden. Yeah, Lawyer says that Roman, who is 76, seemed very dejected when I visited him. And the Reuters wire tells us Polanski pleaded guilty in Los Angeles, you'll remember, to having sex with a 13-year-old girl. And now we know that actually what happened was he raped a 13-year-old. He drugged her and raped her. But Reuters reporters. Well, I guess it has rhythm either way. Reuters writers and Reuters reporters seem to have, you know, they seem to be uncomfortable with just coming out and saying that Roman Polanski raped a 13-year-old girl. Why do you think that is, that reporters would say that he pled guilty to having sex with a 13-year-old instead of really coming out with the truth and just saying that he raped her, drugged her and raped her, sodomized her, did horrible things to her? Could it be that they're up to the very same thing, except with, you know, like Filipino boys, and, you know, there's just the same class of deviants are writing the article as Roman Polanski, who's depressed and dejected. I feel for him. Really breaks my heart. All right, now on to more serious news. I've got a story here from the London Daily Telegraph. The headline says, God is not the creator, claims an academic. Professor Ellen Van Vold, a respected Old Testament scholar, claims the first sentence of Genesis, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, is not a true translation of the Hebrew. What a shocker. And this is a respected Old Testament scholar. Now, who she's respected by, I'm not sure. Perhaps by the London Daily Telegraph, perhaps by other people who don't really understand the Bible. You know, one thing, I don't know if I've said this on the air, but my daughter is 8 years old, and we do Bible study quite often, almost every night before she goes to bed. And some of the kiddie Bibles she has are, let's just say, less than true to the intent of the actual scripture. And so she's grown up from the time she was knee-high to a grasshopper, hearing from her dad, I always say, Nicole, whenever you hear someone talking about the Bible or teaching you from the Bible, always assume that they have no idea what they're talking about. Please always assume that. Move forward based on that assumption, and you'll be much better off. Now, what does Ellen Van Vold have to say? She claims she's carried out a fresh textual analysis that suggests the writers of the great book never intended to suggest that God created the world. Yeah. She said she has concluded that the Hebrew verb bara, which is used in the first sentence of the book of Genesis, does not mean to create, but to spatially separate. So the first sentence should read, according to respected Old Testament scholar Ellen Van Vold, it should read, in the beginning God separated the heaven and the earth. Not quite as dramatic as God created the heaven and the earth, but it apparently fits better with a number of theologians and scholars and their worldview. Let's see, is there anything more of interest here? She concluded that God did not create. He separated the earth from the heaven, the land from the sea, and the sea monsters from the birds, and the swarming at the ground. She says there was already water. Now, she doesn't get into where that came from. She says there were sea monsters. God did create some things, but not the heaven and the earth. The usual idea of creating out of nothing is a big misunderstanding, she says. Yeah. She said she hoped that her conclusions would spark a robust debate. So we are trying to track down Miss Ellen Van Volde, Van Vold, to try to get her on Bob Enyart's show. Bob Enyart, that's the Christian talk show host, pastor, who has never lost a debate against a liberal. And we're going to see if Ellen Van Vold can trip him up. They haven't been able to find her yet. You know, those well-respected Old Testament scholars can be difficult to find. Now, I think that Ellen is just another ignorant theologian, typical of 90% of the people teaching the Bible today. And it seems to me she may be trying to fit creation in with an evolutionary worldview. She's so afraid that the scientists who claim the Earth is hundreds of millions and billions of years old and the universe is billions of years old, she's so afraid they're right, even though they don't have any real good evidence, she's so afraid they're right that she wants Christianity and creation to fit in with that. And it's just, listen, Ellen, they're mutually exclusive. Believe one or the other. There was either creation or there was evolution by natural selection. Pick one. And pick creation if you want to spend eternity with God. Pick evolution if you want to appear like a moron when it's finally established that evolution is a cruel joke and a hoax played on humanity. Now, warning. Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone who would ever quote a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. I want to challenge Miss Ellen von Vold because she talks about the first line of the Bible. And one of my favorite things to do, by the way, and you should try this, ladies and gentlemen, it's a lot of fun. I've done it on the radio for years. Whenever someone wants to debate the Bible, and it's obvious that they are not favorable to the Scripture, just ask them if they could quote for you the first sentence in the Bible. You will be amazed at how many people are stumped by this. Now, one would think that Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. You would think that even the average, unwashed, garden variety heathen would know that. Just because the culture is permeated with Scripture and just through osmosis alone, it should soak in the first line of the Bible. But you'd be amazed at how many people can't come up with it. And when I'm on the radio taking calls and someone wants to debate the Bible and they can't quote the first line, I tell them they need to study up and then I hang up on them. Yeah. Because, you know, don't come to a debate completely unarmed because it will just be embarrassing for you. Go study up, you know, and call me back in, you know, 3-4 years. Anyway, on to our Bible verses. Now, what Miss Ellen von Vold does not address is some of the following verses, like Genesis 1:6. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so, and God called the firmament heaven. Now, I don't want to get into, you know, Pastor Bob Enyart teaches that whether figurative or literal, the crust of the earth is the boundary between heaven and hell. And you know, he says it's consistent with the Bible story that God would originally call the crust of the earth heaven. The earth, the ground, the land, heaven. And everything below the crust can be referred to as hell. The prison God had planned for any future unrepentant beings in his creation. But that's a whole Bible study in and of itself, and I don't want to get off track. I will put a link on the blog to Pastor Enyart's writings and his pronouncements on this matter. It's been taken seriously by some rather distinguished creation scientists. Distinguished creation scientists being the antithesis of a well-respected Old Testament scholar like Ellen von Vold. And Ellen, by the way, some other verses, Genesis 2, starting in the 4th verse, this is the story of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that the Lord God made the earth and the heavens. Exodus 20, in God's command to Israel to observe the Sabbath, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the 7th day. Exodus, and now I know whenever I bring up the Sabbath, the heathens out there and the unchurched and just the biblically ignorant, they say, "Oh yeah, didn't God command that anyone who picked up sticks on the Sabbath should be put to death?" And they say that this proves that God is irrational and that his law is arbitrary. But keep in mind Exodus 31, starting at the 16th verse, "Therefore God told the children of Israel, 'You shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout your generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the 7th day he rested and was refreshed.'" So it is a sign. The Sabbath is not a moral law for all you biblically illiterate morons out there. It was a sign. And yes, God protected it jealously, that sign, that of the covenant. But it was a sign. All right. Now, I want to go from the Scripture appropriately to the personhood file, which gets thicker every week, the personhood file, because personhood news is exploding across the nation. From the Great Falls Tribune up in Great Falls, Montana, a Dateline of Helena, national anti-abortion activists have joined state lawmakers and religious leaders in support of a constitutional initiative, 102, a proposed ballot measure that seeks to ban abortion in Montana by defining personhood as all human beings from the beginning of the biological development of that human being. That's Montana. It's happening. Now, opponents, I always like to quote from the opponents because, I mean, I don't want to just preach to the choir and tell you that, you know, it's well established in your conscience, in my conscience, in science, in nature, in any standard of morality that an unborn child is a person. It's well established. So let's not argue that. Let's see what the opponents have to say. Now, opponents are using the personhood conferences that are going on up in Montana as a catalyst for building support against the measure. Allison Hagen, executive director of NARAL, Pro-Choice Montana, said the measure is being driven by out-of-state groups bent on using Montana's initiative process to set the stage for a constitutional showdown over Roe versus Wade. And I would have to say, Allison, I agree. I'm part of the out-of-state forces. Did she call us forces? Out-of-state groups. Okay, I'd prefer to be called out-of-state forces. Thank you very much. But yeah, Personhood USA, Colorado Right to Life. You know, personhood, the modern personhood movement, started here in Colorado by a small flock of very brave and conscientious American patriots. And yes, we are bent on using Montana's initiative process to set the stage for a constitutional showdown over Roe versus Wade. We welcome the day when that showdown takes place. Well, let's see. Some anti-abortion groups, according to the Great Falls Tribune story, in Montana are sticking to the sidelines. Yeah, anti-abortion groups are sticking to the sidelines, they say. Officials for the Montana Catholic Conference, Right to Life Montana, and the Montana Family Foundation have said they will not back personhood out of fear it could have unintended consequences for the anti-abortion movement. Yeah, like all the people in charge of all these groups will be out of a job when abortion is made illegal. Not to put too fine a point on it. The Montana Catholic Conference, they say that personhood has a heavy reliance on unpredictable courts and dependence on future legislative actions to define and implement the law. And I would just say to the Catholic leaders, the pro-life leaders, all the pro-life leaders who seem to be hedging on personhood because they think it's not good political strategery, you know, you've been telling us to rely on the courts and you've been telling us to put people in office who could make legislation that would somehow end abortion, but what you ended up doing was teaching everyone to regulate abortion. Talk about relying on unpredictable courts and a dependence on future legislative efforts. That's what we've been doing for 30 years. You know, the definition of insanity is to keep doing the same thing and expect something different. Well, you in the leadership, you old geezers, who I don't know if your retirement is bound up in keeping abortion alive as an issue and never ending it. But we, the younger generation, and I would stress that it's people a lot younger than I am, as a matter of fact, are sick of it. I mean, we want to come out of the wilderness. It is the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and we are coming out of the wilderness into the personhood movement, back into the personhood file. We have a report from CBS TV down in, up in Montana again. Constitutional Initiative 102 that we just mentioned is a new constitutional initiative in Montana, which would establish unborn babies as people under Montana code, according to CBS TV. Now, Lindsay Love of Planned Parenthood said, quote, "At the end of the day, we think this is a backdoor attempt to weaken Montana's constitution and restrict women and families' rights to privacy. And another tool used by out-of-state extremists to threaten Montana's constitutionally protected rights. All right. Well, now, if we've gone from out-of-state groups, now we're out-of-state extremists. I say we're out-of-state forces. Yes, forces coming, storming the border there with Montana. Now, supporters up there in Montana will need nearly 50,000 signatures to get the initiative on the ballot. So any listeners up in Montana, get on your horse and get going. You know, Planned Parenthood spent $3 million fighting us here in Colorado. Can you imagine how much they'll have to spend if they have to fight us in 10 states in the next election? Speaking of 10 states, Dateline Michigan, from the legislative page of the Michigan government website, Joint Resolution 2 has been introduced by Jim Slezak, a representative there, and here's what it states, ladies and gentlemen. Drum roll, please. Every human person has a right to life, which is the paramount and most fundamental right guaranteed under the Constitution and laws of this state. With respect to the fundamental and inalienable right to life, the word person applies to all human beings, irrespective of age, race, gender, health, function, condition of dependency, including physical or mental dependency, or method of reproduction from the beginning of their biological development, including fertilization. Take that! All right. So Michigan is on board. Apparently, they are introducing an initiative that the voters will vote on to amend their state constitution. They're doing that through the legislature. Very interesting. Good job, Jim Slezak up there in Michigan. We hope to get him on Bob Enyart's broadcast, you know, the show that's actually on the radio here in Denver, as opposed to the Weekly Worldview, which is a guy in his mom's basement talking to a wall. No, I'm not in my mom's basement. I'm in my own basement. But in the basement, I am indeed. But the show is growing by leaps and bounds, from what I understand. And I thank everyone out there for listening. But I am on the radio almost every day here in Denver, co-hosting with Bob Enyart, as I am wont to do from time to time. So we will try to get Representative Slezak on there, as we also try to chase down that theologian, Ellen von Volde. Talk about a couple of great interviews. All right. Now getting back to the personhood file, let's go to Oklahoma. Feminists for Choice, this is from their blog, they're very upset over a proposed bill in Oklahoma's legislature. It's called the Statistical Reporting of Abortions Act. Excuse me, see, there's my throat, it's almost gone here. The Statistical Reporting of Abortions Act, and the writer for the Feminists for Choice is one Mrs. Mastro, she calls herself. She's upset about this proposed law that says abortion clinics have to report all these statistics to the state. That's what the law looks like on its surface. But she's mad because she says there's no place on the form for women to say, I'm having an abortion because I want to and because you don't get to tell me what to do with my uterus. That's why she's mad. So I'm not sure how old she was when she killed her baby or how old her baby was when she killed it. But this statement makes it fairly clear that that is indeed part of the history of Mrs. Mastro. But let's move on. Mrs. Mastro warns the people of Oklahoma, the real point behind this colossal piece of legislative vomit, that she calls it, she says there are two very dangerous definitions written into this proposed law. Those definitions are thus: unborn child means the unborn offspring of human beings from the moment of conception through pregnancy and until live birth, including the human conceptus, zygote, morula, blastocyst, embryo, and fetus. Wow. Oh, man. That is awesome. So they wrote that into this otherwise innocuous-looking abortion regulation law. And I'd have to read the whole law to see if I agree with it. But if that's the way they want to define a person in the law, then I don't think the law could end with, and then you can kill the baby, like so many of our abortion regulations have done over the years. The other dangerous definition written into the Statistical Reporting of Abortions Act: conception means the fertilization of the ovum of a female individual by the sperm of a male individual. So this protects, I mean, from a single cell. I mean, the conceptus is a single cell. So I like the definition. I'll have to read the law to see if I agree in toto with it. But there's so much personhood news, I haven't had a chance to analyze everything in depth. But I am happy that Mrs. Mastro here at Feminists for Choice is very upset. She says, let's not be fooled anymore, dear readers. Let's call these yahoos, that's us, the personhood movement, let's call these yahoos out for what's really going on. They want to make every sperm sacred, period. Interesting choice of words there from Mrs. Mastro. But Mrs. Mastro, not every sperm, just everything from the conceptus on. Okay, will you give us that? If you won't give us that, we will take it from you, you whore. Okay, now let's, from the Zelda Lily blog. Now this is a feminist blog. And she says, she starts off her blog, this is Maria Mercedes at the Zelda Lily blog. She starts out by saying, obesity and excessive weight gain is really, really bad for fetuses and pregnant women. Personhood movement, a heavily Christian anti-choice movement, that is trying to push for individual rights for unborn children and making it illegal for pregnant women to do things like drink or smoke that might potentially harm their fetus. She says, do you see where this is going? So, you know, this is something that the anti-personhood people bring up. Well, you're going to make it illegal for a woman to smoke crack or smoke cigarettes or drink too much Coca-Cola while she's pregnant because it could harm another person. And you know what? I'm willing to argue all that in court after we establish personhood, you whore. The personhood movement, she says, is blatantly anti-choice. I agree with her 100%. And sees the establishment of certain rights for fetuses as a way to make abortion illegal. According to the Personhood USA website, the movement wants to establish local and federal laws that would make the rights of an unborn child more important than the rights of the pregnant mother. Now, excuse me while I cough. Okay, I'm back. Okay, I'm going to have a drink now. Just water. No Coca-Cola, no vodka. Okay, but I'm not pregnant. Now, wait a minute, where am I going? Now, she says that according to Personhood USA's website, they want to make the rights of the unborn more important than the rights of the pregnant mother, and I've been to the Personhood USA website, and they want equal rights for both. That's all. You lying whore. She says, I called up Keith Mason, co-founder of Personhood USA, to get clarity about what declaring a fetus a person might mean for criminalizing the pregnant obese. So she's back to the obesity thing. Despite supporting my initial hypotheticals about criminalizing drug and alcohol use by the pregnant, Mason declined to answer a direct question about obesity. He said, quote, I can't answer that because it's a hypothetical, he said. It's like asking what would happen if a Martian came down and impregnated a woman on Earth. Let's talk about real issues. You stupid whore. No, Keith didn't say you stupid whore. That's me. I interjected that, but nice job, Keith. Martians, that's pretty good. More personhood news. This is from, where is this from here? This is out of Florida. I'm sorry, I didn't write down the website. It's by a fellow named Thomas Dollar, and it is a news report, or possibly it is a column, an opinion column, I'm not sure. I apologize, but I've been out on the streets for the better part of the last 48 hours, screaming at the top of my lungs at people who are killing innocent people. And so, bear with me. Thomas Dollar says, redefining legal personhood to include the unborn is a radical change in policy that goes beyond the mere prohibition of abortion. As Justice Blackmun observed in Roe v. Wade, never in the United States has person been defined to mean anything other than a born human, even when abortion was criminalized generally. Now, if you haven't heard of the Blackmun hole, Blackmun basically said, look, if the unborn child is ever found to be a person, the case for legal abortion collapses. That person will be protected under the 14th Amendment. That's what Mr. Dollar is referencing here. And he brings up an interesting point that really motivates me. He says that never in the United States, and I would add never anywhere on the face of the planet, has a person been defined to mean anything other than a born human, even when abortion was criminalized generally. And there's two things here that says to me. That tells me that this movement is quite possibly the greatest civil rights, human rights movement in the history of the world, because it's never been done, even though it's always been written on the conscience of every man and woman and child in the world. It's never been codified in law anywhere, as far as I know. Okay, it's the greatest civil rights movement in the history of the world. The greatest civil rights movement in human history, and that makes sense because the crime that's been committed, abortion, is the most diabolical crime committed in all of human history and has killed more innocent people than all the crimes and all the wars combined in all of human history. The Guttmacher Institute, a pro-choice, pro-abortion institute, estimates that 1.6 billion children have been killed since legalization began in Europe and the United States back in the late 60s, early 70s. 1.6 billion dead. So the greatest, most diabolical crime in history is now being taken on by the most incredible, the most important, the most significant social movement in the history of mankind. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney, and I'm so glad to have you aboard as we continue in the personhood file, because the personhood file is thickest pile of the week, and since we're dealing with the greatest social movement in the history of all mankind, it does make sense that the personhood file would indeed be quite thick. Now, Mr. Dollar ends his column here with this. He says, Personhood USA, quoting Personhood USA again, he said, Personhood USA has no desire. Well, let's see here. What is this related to? Well, now he points out earlier in the article that if we're going to call unborn children persons, from everything from the conceptus, two cells or three cells, all the way through to live birth, well, that's going to create problems for the census. Yeah, that's what he says, because, we have to have a census every 10 years. And how are we going to account for all these legal persons who may or may not exist? He says this will make life very difficult for census takers. Okay, so that's the best he's got. And at the end he says, Personhood USA has no desire to subpoena women's menstrual blood or count embryos in the census, only to wear away at a woman's reproductive rights by forcing endless litigation. And Mr. Dollar is quite insightful there. We do indeed intend on wearing away at the right of one person to kill another innocent person. That's what he calls women's reproductive rights. Reproductive rights are when one person chooses to kill an innocent person because they're bigger and stronger than that innocent person, and because they can, and because that innocent person is dependent upon them, and they don't want to give of themselves to that unborn person. So when that unborn person is in a completely innocent state, a state of complete and utter dependency upon the love of the person carrying that unborn baby. And so when the person carrying that unborn baby is so selfish that she decides she doesn't want to do that, well, she's bigger and stronger, and she has access to medical technology so that she can kill that other innocent person. That's reproductive rights, just in case you weren't sure. So he says, Personhood USA wants to force endless litigation. Bring it on. Yes. And not only that, we want to escalate social tension. We want to elevate social tension over the issue of innocent people being killed. Yes, we do. And we're ready for endless litigation. We're all for that. Anything that makes the abortion industry spend money on something other than killing babies is good. So bring it on. Bring on the litigation. So Mr. Dollar closes. By the way, he's out of Florida. Next November, Florida voters will have a choice. Either a fetus embryo has all the protections and guarantees of legal personhood, or a woman does. It is not possible to have both. And I would like to remind Mr. Dollar that this is not a college lecture hall where you posit ridiculous things like we can't have both and expect legitimate debate. Okay, you've shown yourself to be an idiot, basically what you're saying here is equal rights are not possible, and that simply flies in the face of all logic and reason. So please take your books and go home, you whore. All right. Now, Dateline, this is an interesting story. This is from the Telegraph Journal up in Canada. October 18th was the 80th anniversary of Canadian women being declared persons. Yeah. The article tells us that if women were not persons, they did not necessarily have the rights and protection of the laws that men benefited from. This is back 80 years ago in Canada. Now, the Canadian women who brought the case to the British Privy Council back then were mostly concerned with the right to be appointed to the Canadian Senate. But the judgment is said to have had far-reaching effect. It overturned arguments that had been used by legislatures for centuries to keep women out of public life. So personhood for women in Canada goes back only 80 years. That's kind of surprising. But I like the idea that the judgment had far-reaching effects. And, you know, the anti-personhood crowd, whether they're active in the child-killing movement or they're just part of the pro-life industry that makes their living acting like they're trying to end abortion, both of those camps get upset with we in the personhood movement because they say that you don't understand the implications of what you're doing. And, you know, all I've got to say, and I think I said it before, is, you know, bring it on. Let's figure all that out after we establish the fundamental personhood of all human beings in an effort especially to defend the smallest, most helpless, most defenseless, and undeniably the most innocent among us. Let's establish that, and then we'll work on the implications. I'm willing to hire the lawyers to go to court to discuss those things with you. Okay. So that's the personhood file for the week. Look, it's taken a good half of the show. Boy, personhood, I'll tell you, has all the earmarks of a movement because there's no real defined leader. There's a few spokesmen. There's a few people giving some money. But it's a movement. It's a movement out of the hearts of men, led by the Spirit of God, I do believe. All right, now let's move into the justice file. This is, let's see, out of Denver from the Associated Press. Colorado authorities said they inadvertently released a sex offender from prison under a money-saving early release initiative. The first round of prisoners were released back in September, and they included, now they're releasing people from prison to save money, because they've got a $318 million budget shortfall out here in Colorado. So the first prisoners they released included 51-year-old Benjo Riel, who was convicted in a child sex assault case in 1982, but was serving time this time for theft. Yeah. And so the Republicans and the Democrats are arguing with each other over whether or not releasing prisoners is a good idea. The Republicans just want to do it with more oversight. The Democrats, I think they just want to release them all so that they can be part-time public school teachers. I mean, don't quote me on that, but that's the way it comes across to me when I hear about local politics here in Colorado. By the way, for those of you who think that a note to you Republicans who want to regulate the release of people who should be punished, let's just say that. Only inmates, according to the law, releasing these maniacs upon society, only inmates who are scheduled to be released within 180 days are eligible for this early release program. So this is just accelerating the mistake that was happening already because these people are being released without proper punishment, is all I'm saying. If you want to know what I think proper punishment is, go back and listen to old shows because I'm running out of time here. From the Justice File, Dateline West Palm Beach, Florida, three men convicted of the gang rape of a West Palm Beach woman and the beating of her young son were sentenced to life in prison last week. Yeah, Palm Beach Circuit Judge Krista Marks sentenced these three bastards to life in prison. So they get life, even though they've destroyed the lives of two people. They get life. Authorities say fingerprints and DNA found on clothing and condoms in the apartment identified the defendants, who were juveniles at the time of the crime. In a statement, State Attorney Michael McAuliffe said, quote, now this is the winning side. He said, quote, today justice was done for the mother and child who were the victims of a brutal, vicious attack on their bodies and their characters. I would posit to you, Mr. Michael McAuliffe, that justice was not done for this mother. Now, the victim, according to the article, was not present at the sentencing. However, prosecutor Althea McRoberts read a letter from her in which she said she and her son were still suffering greatly. In the letter, the victim said she's afraid to leave the house. She's seeing a psychologist and has been treated for cervical cancer, which she believes is due to the chemicals the defendants put inside her. She said her son, who was beaten and restrained while his mother was raped before his very eyes by three monsters. She said her son is also seeing a psychologist and feels guilty that he could not protect his mother. How do you let these three people live? How? I mean, that is perhaps a greater crime than the crime that occurred, that you would allow these three to dwell on the face of God's green earth. I tell you, our justice system, our judges and our lawyers have been so trained in legal positivism that they no longer know right from wrong. They no longer can recognize justice. Both the prosecutors, the defenders, and I will even include the judges, none of them can properly identify justice anymore. They're simply legal positivists, cogs in the machine, just going through the motions of what they believe justice to be. And it's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. I'm sure there are citizens there in West Palm Beach who would be willing to execute justice upon these three monsters. Just sad. All right. Now, and that's depressing, but let's go to politics so that we can get further depressed by the downward spiral of Western civilization. A video has been recovered showing Jeff Davis, who's the Department of Education's Office of Safe Schools czar. You remember this cat, right? Jeff Davis. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. The story is actually about Kevin Jennings. I'm sorry. Kevin Jennings is the Department of Education's Office of Safe Schools czar. His partner is Jeff Davis. Forgive me, I was caught off guard by the fact that it was another man, okay? Jeff Davis was addressing a banquet, and he said of Jennings, he was a member of ACT UP. ACT UP! So it's like, you know, here's a big gay activist. Big gay activist. That's my partner, Kevin. All right, so Kevin Jennings, Barry Hoes, Safe School Czar, was a member of ACT UP. And I'm not going to get up into the things that ACT UP did. Google it for yourself. It'll make you want to puke or take a shower or both. From the war file, this will lift your spirits. U.S. President Barack Obama's recent decision to cancel the deployment of an anti-missile defense system in Eastern Europe was met with approval by Russian authorities. In exchange, speaking at the recent G20 summit in Pittsburgh last month, Russian President Dmitry Medvedev changed his position regarding sanctions against Iran. Now, this article was originally published at the Adelson Institute for Strategic Studies at the Shalem Center. They're at Adelsoninstitute.org. The question is, why is Russia seem not to be afraid of an Iranian bomb? Well, the reporter tells us that Medvedev, suddenly, after Barry Ho took down the missile shield for Poland and Czechoslovakia, Medvedev suddenly hardened his rhetoric, mentioning sanctions as a possible course of action against Iran. So either way, the report tells us, it's quite clear that Russia does not fear the emergence of its new nuclear neighbor and is even actively aiding the construction of the nuclear station in Iran. Why? The question is, why? Aren't the Russians afraid of a suicidal Islamic regime having a nuclear bomb? Couple of reasons, he says. One, because Russia stands to benefit greatly from Iran's opposition vis-a-vis the United States, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. This will increase regional tensions and strengthen Russia's position there. Second, Russia can use its relations with Iran as a bargaining chip in opposing the United States, as the latest events demonstrate. Further, Russia isn't willing to forego its economic relations with Iran. And finally, Russia and Iran are both significant suppliers of oil to the world market. Every increase of political tension in the region influences oil prices. from which Russia can only gain. This is especially true, according to the report, during times of military conflict. So the Russians, basically, they're doing it for money. They're not suicidal ideologues over there in Russia. They're not ideologues in any sense anymore since the collapse of communism. Now they're just greedy oligarchs, which can be equally as dangerous because they make deals with suicidal maniacs intent on blowing up Israel and eventually, quite possibly, starting World War III. Doug McBurney, I am the host of the Weekly Worldview. So good to have you along as we document the rise of personhood amidst the downfall of Western civilization. From the culture file to something to... Okay, those last few stories were a bit much. Anchorage, Alaska, from the Associated Press. Native Alaskans say a fourth grader may have become the youngest person to kill a whale. Yeah. Delivering the fatal blow to a 32-foot bowhead during his hands-on hunting lesson from his uncles. 9-year-old Paul Potkotak is apparently the youngest person in whaler memory credited with a kill. I just think that's neat, you know? They say the kid likes to play video games, snowmobile, and hunt. So maybe there's hope for Alaska anyway. Let's see. This is an email I got from Rich up in Canada. Parts unknown. He says, "Doug, I'm writing to say that after your story regarding the CW news editor out in Knoxville, Tennessee, and if you want to know about that story, I'll put a link on the blog. I don't have time to go into it. It's really disgusting. A news director from a TV station out in the Knoxville, Tennessee area." He got caught, doing something at a truck stop I don't want to go into it. Rich says, "Doug, I can't go near truck stops anymore. Yuck. It's time to bring up the Coalition for a Homo-Free America again. Start increasing the membership over there." He said, "Maybe Bob Enyart can start selling gay away again so I can keep some in my car in case I go to a truck stop." And Rich says, "Doug, I've got a flight to catch. I got to go. But I bet there's one gay flight attendant at least. If they're all females, Rich, there may not be a homosexual flight attendant guy." Yeah, we used to call them male stewardesses. But now we've taken to calling them flight attendants guys. Yeah, just for the sake of the acronym. Anyway, let's move on to the culture file. Dateline Billings, Montana. Billings, Montana, I said. Montana police say a man who may have been using a large garbage bin as a shelter from the cold was apparently crushed when the bin was empty. The man's body was found in a city waste truck. Yellowstone County Deputy Coroner said the man died of blunt force injuries to the chest and that his death has been ruled accidental. So his death is accidental, but it's no less permanent. So for all you youngsters out there, the choices you make that lead you to where you end up in life are serious, and you need to seriously consider the choices you make. Here's a gentleman who made some bad choices in his life, and he ended up to the point where he was sleeping in a dumpster and apparently remained unconscious as the dumpster was emptied into a truck, and then the truck crushed all the garbage. And anyway... when you're tempted to get involved with drugs or alcohol, just try to remember this story. You know, those are the kind of choices early in your life at the age of 13, 14 that can lead you to an inauspicious end in a garbage dumpster in Billings, Montana. Okay? So just beware. From Fox News, the White House has declared Fox News a wing of the Republican Party. So the White House has finally caught up with me. I've been saying that for the better part of 10 years. I don't even know how long Fox has been on the air, but it's a wing of the Republican Party. Boy, they're real geniuses over there at the White House, huh? Okay, now I don't have a lot of time left. So I'm going to set some stories aside because I don't have time to cover them all. From California, the Associated Press, Arnold Schwarzenegger this past week signed a bill establishing Harvey Milk Day. Yep. The bill calls for the day to be observed by public schools as a day of special significance. Teachers will be encouraged to conduct exercises recalling Milk's life. Now, that's just scary. Because you know what Harvey Milk did with other men? I mean, I hope the exercises don't... you never know. It's public school in California. Now, as if that weren't enough, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger has also signed a bill recognizing gay marriages sanctioned in other states during the 5 months when homosexuals were allowed to marry out there in California. So Governor Schwarzenegger certainly acquitting himself in a poor manner as his career comes to an end out here. Let's see, from the culture file, the domestic tranquility file, an 11th grade Carolina Forest High School student, South Carolina, is dead after stabbing a resource officer who defended himself with gunfire. Carolina Forest High School, by the way, is equipped with 9 metal detectors. 9 metal detectors. School officials say the campus is safe and secure, and school will continue with a regular schedule. They did note that Friday night's football game versus South Florence High School was postponed. Anything else? In June 2006, 18-year-old Natalia Holmes was stabbed 15 times to death by her estranged boyfriend in the same school's parking lot. But the campus is safe and secure, and school will continue with a regular schedule. That's South Carolina. I don't want to do that story. Dateline Reno, Nevada. A Nevada man has been sentenced to up to 2.5 years in jail for killing his neighbor's puppy. Daniel Thomas Wells pleaded guilty to a charge of killing an animal of another in the beating death, of the 6-month-old Chihuahua. Washoe County Deputy District Attorney says the case was elevated to felony status because there was evidence of malice. Yeah, this is from the Reno, Nevada, on the AP Wire. No word yet as to whether or not hate crime charges will be pursued in the beating death of the 6-month-old Chihuahua. I don't want to do that story. Oh, here we go. From Fox 31 News here in Denver, police departments are reporting a significant increase in home invasions and robberies near medical marijuana dispensary stores. Yeah. The Attorney General says the rise in crime may prompt state lawmakers to take a closer look at the amendment that legalized medical marijuana 9 years ago to see if there's additional legislation that could be passed to give the state more control over the blooming marijuana business. Yeah. Now, of course, the medical marijuana people say, well, look, just legalize pot. So, you know, anywhere where there's a stash of drugs, legal or illegal, crime, there's crime. You know, that's why junkies break into pharmacies. You know, so anyway, are they surprised now that these dispensaries of marijuana where these druggies know that there's all this pot, are they surprised that they're breaking in? And you want to legalize pot so that everyone can grow it in their house so that druggies can break into anyone who's, I don't know, got red eyes and cotton mouth? I mean, you can break in their house. They probably got a stash. Anyway, it's just disturbing. I'm not for legalizing drugs because it teaches the children the wrong message. That's why. And I'm willing to defend that. Let's see here. From the Domestic Tranquility File. do I want to do that first? I don't want to do that story at all. From the Domestic Tranquility File, a Florida man told investigators bad spirits made him kill his wife and 5 children. Records show Ghislaine Damas was, that's the wife, was bound with a rope. Her mouth was covered with duct tape. After the tape was removed, she begged her husband not to hurt the children. Masek Damas told investigators he had second thoughts, but realized if he let her go, she would call police and his children would be taken away, so he killed them all. So I wonder if the bad spirits told him that that if he let them go, that they'd call police. I wonder if that's... Anyway, Misek Damas was charged with murder and deported from Haiti, where he had fled after the killings. That was from the Associated Press, Naples, Florida. Shocking story of the week. Deerfield Beach, Florida, from the Associated Press. Five teenagers were charged with aggravated battery after dousing a 15-year-old with rubbing alcohol and setting him on fire because he stopped someone from stealing his father's bicycle. Michael Brewer was hospitalized with burns on more than three-quarters of his body after the attack. Brewer is expected to remain hospitalized for 5 months, and the five teenagers who set him on fire were not charged as adults, for whatever that's worth. Dateline Detroit, Michigan. From the Associated Press, a woman intentionally set fire at her boyfriend's mobile home in suburban Detroit, killing two of her young children while fleeing with a third child. Wayne County prosecutors did not specify a motive, saying only that Sharon Hinojosa knowingly left the children who were not fathered by her boyfriend. So she set the house on fire, killing the two children and fleeing with a third. Let's see. The maximum penalty for her crime is life in prison. And prosecutors said this should send chills up the spine of every person. And I'm wondering, is it this crime or the fact that the maximum penalty is life? Because that sends chills up my spine just as much as the crime does. At last report, the mother was in a hospital after drinking rubbing alcohol. All right, let's see. I don't want to do that. Let's see, Jesse Jackson last week joined parents in escorting a group of students who attend high school in Chicago's South Side. Yeah, from the Associated Press. He says the plan is to ensure students' safe arrivals and to highlight how long it takes students to ride the several miles from one public housing project to their high school. But we know that mostly this is about keeping Jackson's face in the news. We'll have to check in next week. See if Jesse's still riding the bus with those poor kids on the south side of Chicago. Dateline Berlin from the Reuters Wire. German police are investigating a chili sauce to determine whether it was so spicy that it was capable of causing grievous bodily harm when used in attack. Yeah, police took a sample of the sauce from a kebab stand there in Berlin after a kebab salesman threw it into the eyes of a customer during a fight over napkins. Now, I was telling my wife, Takako, about the... Who, by the way, she'll be back next week. And boy, do I miss my baby. I was telling Takako about this on the phone, and she only had one question. She said, can we get some of that sauce? Yeah, Takako likes spicy food. So she's going to be bringing back some souvenirs from Japan, but she wants to know if I can get some of this sauce... from Berlin. I told her I'd work on it, and I will do that as I go into the week. And that's it. That's the worldview. I want to thank KGov, KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Theology Online, and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.